Welcome back to Never Found, Never Forgotten. I'm your host, Melanie. This week, I'm going to tell you two stories. Not because they're linked in any way at all, but because they both take place in the California wilderness. That's it. That's all. I've been trying to make my episodes a bit longer, and so I'm trying to group them based on similarities. Because, listen, I don't have someone who researches these things. It's me. I research them. It's me and my laptop. And then I have to write a script. And then I record it. And then I edit it. It's all me. And I want to make longer episodes. But there's only so much I can do on my own as far as research goes. So this is where we're at. And I hope you're okay with it. So welcome. Anyhow, we're going to discuss two disappearances today that both take place in California. The 1981 disappearance of Stacy Aris from Yosemite National Park and the 1998 disappearance of Jonathan Augey from the Devil's Punch Bowl area of the Angeles National Forest. Stacy Aris was 14 and visiting Yosemite with her dad and several others on July 17, 1981. The group arrived at their campsite near the Sunrise High Sierra Camp via horseback. It must have been just beautiful. I imagine it to be beautiful. Arriving via horseback, there's a lake nearby, just gorgeous. There are several cabins, and the group tied up the horses and start settling in. Stacy changed her clothes and grabbed her camera and headed out of her cabin to start photographing the nearby Sunrise Lake. She invited her dad to go with her, but he was still setting up camp and he declined. But a 77-year-old man who was traveling with them went with her. From the campsite, the rest of the group was able to see Stacy and the man walk down the hill toward the lake. They saw the man sit down and Stacy walk closer to the lake, snapping pictures all the while. Everything seemed fine. Completely normal. Everything's fine. After about 20 to 30 minutes, the elderly man went back up to the camp, and Stacy continued to snap pictures of the lake and the surrounding landscape. Eventually, she stepped into a tree line. After a few minutes, when Stacy didn't return, the other group members went to look for her and didn't find her. Eventually, they alerted park authorities and a massive search was conducted. 50 to 100 volunteers turn out, 3 helicopters come in, 8 dog teams aid in the search for Stacy. But the only sign of her that they found was the lens to her camera, found near the tree line where she was last seen. Initially, investigators theorized that she intentionally walked away. She's a 14-year-old girl. She doesn't want to be camping with her family. She just ran away. She misses her boyfriend. She ran away. Park officials did say that Stacy may have been having trouble with her family and school and missing her boyfriend. But her family didn't really agree with this theory that she walked away. And a spokesperson for the park said that one of the last conversations Stacy had with her dad was about her shoes. She had been wearing flip-flops, and he told her if she was going to walk around and take photos that she should change into boots. And he said if she intended to walk away, if she intended on running away, she wouldn't have initially been wearing flip-flops, which makes a lot of sense. Like, if you intend on running away, flip-flops are going to be your last choice, especially when you're in the rugged wilderness in Yosemite. Stacy Aris is still missing today. She's described as being 5'5", 120 pounds. She's a Caucasian female with blonde hair and blue eyes. She has pierced ears and upper and lower dental retainers. She had an Olympus camera with her with a multicolored embroidered strap at the time of her disappearance that has also never been recovered. Anyone with information on the disappearance of Stacey Aris can contact the National Park Service at 209-379-1992. 38-year-old Jonathan Auge set out for a hike on the morning of June 11, 1998. This was not unusual for John. He was an avid hiker and outdoorsman. On that day, he was hiking in the Devil's Punch Bowl area of the Angeles National Forest. And the Devil's Punch Bowl is a remote park on the north slope of the San Gabriel Mountains. Jonathan hiked here about once a week, and not only did he enjoy hiking, but he also ran daily and was a long-distance runner. Get this. This blew my mind. He had completed not one, but 6 50-mile ultra marathons. 50 miles. Jonathan and I have nothing in common. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Jonathan was a former paratrooper with the U.S. Army Special Forces, and at the time of his disappearance, he was employed with the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. He'd been there for 15 years, and he was actually a dog handler in their Special Enforcement Bureau. And in fact, he trained with his dog in the mountains, so he knew this area very well, and he was very experienced. He was also described as being a very dedicated employee. He worked nights, he rarely called in sick or took vacation. And the morning of Thursday, June 11th, he actually had the day off, and he was going to spend the day hiking. Early into the hike, he ran into a teacher with a group of kids on a field trip, and he stopped and he chatted with them for a minute, and he mentioned that he planned to hike to the summit of Mount Baden-Powell, a 9,400-foot tall mountain about 20 miles away. And again, nothing in common with this guy. My day off looks very different. It involves lots of potato chips and Netflix. Not hiking 20 miles. Very different. Over several hours, two witnesses saw a man matching John's description jogging toward the mountain. So it's not enough just to hike. He's also jogging up there. The last sighting of John was about 6 p.m. when witnesses saw him heading toward the parking lot. This is right on track for his timeline, like what he expected. But it was also around this time that area residents reported hearing a single gunshot in the vicinity. At 11 p.m., when John hadn't returned home, his wife called the sheriff's office to report him missing. And they found his truck still parked in the parking lot, and they began a search at 11:30 p.m. Early Friday morning, an extensive search involving two helicopters, 30 searchers, and scent dogs began to hike John's route. They find no sign of him except footprints in the snow on the summit of Mount Baden-Powell. 17 Air Force personnel from Edwards Air Force Base, search and rescue teams from Mount Rose and Antelope Valley, as well as LA Sheriff Emergency Services and Special Enforcement turn out to help aid in the searches on Friday and Saturday. On Sunday, police hold their breath hoping for a sign of John. He was scheduled to work at 4 p.m. and he's never been a no-call, no-show. Surely he will show up at work. But again, there's no sign of John. Eventually, the search is called off after about a week with no answers. John left behind a 5-year-old daughter at the time of his disappearance. He and his wife were high school sweethearts, and though his wife said that about a month before his disappearance, he told her he wanted a divorce. John's sister said that he was unhappy living in Los Angeles County and wanted to move to the mountains. Investigators were hopeful that a two-year methamphetamine operation called Operation Silent Thunder in Antelope Valley would lead to clues in John's disappearance. They were not clear why they thought this, but no clues were found. I can only speculate that if John was involved in investigating drug-related crimes, he may have been the victim of foul play. Jonathan Aljay is described as a Caucasian male, 6 foot tall, weighing 165 pounds. He has brown hair and eyes. He has the U.S. Army emblem tattooed on his upper left arm and the letters SEB inside a triangle tattooed on his upper right arm. Anyone with information on the disappearance of Jonathan Aljay can contact the LA County Sheriff's Department at 323-890-5500. That is my episode for today, but let's talk about books. Let's talk about books. Let's talk about books. Let's talk about books. I need a theme song for Let's Talk About Books. Let's talk about books. Recently, our True Crime Book Club read Highway of Tears, a true story of racism, indifference, and the pursuit of justice for missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls by Jessica McDiarmid. I highly recommend this book. If you're interested in the plight of missing and murdered Indigenous women, this book is must read. It focuses on missing and murdered Indigenous women in Canada, but there are many parallels. Understanding some of the systemic racism, how the crimes are investigated or not investigated, the generational poverty, it all factors in. And this book was very... It was just so well written. It was a very good book, very informative. I highly recommend it. This is something that continues to weigh on my mind, and I'll continue to do episodes on missing and murdered Indigenous women like I've done in previous seasons. This book, if you haven't read it already, I highly recommend it. You know, there are so many factors that go into some of these cases, such as child welfare, keeping families together, poverty, of course, sexual assault. It's a multifaceted issue, and this book really brings to light a lot of these issues and the systemic racism surrounding all of them. I think it's a really important book to read. So highly recommend that. Anyhow, that's my episode for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. As always, you can find me on Twitter at PodNever. You can find me on Facebook, Never Found, Never Forgotten Pod. And you can always email me, neverfoundneverforgottenpod@gmail.com. Thanks so much. Bye.